Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This is the last show of 2013. We recorded it on Sunday, December 29th, 2013. This is episode 1044. Enjoy, and I'll see you next year. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about, technology, computers, and the internet, that internet thing, and your smartphone, and your home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, outside those areas. Do call via Skype or some other, voice over internet thing. And that'll still be free. Skype out will still be free if you do call that number, because it's a toll free number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Chris Marquardt joins us. Half past the next hour to bust a photographic myth and to reassign. So I do hope that y'all had a wonderful holiday. And I guess New Year's Eve is coming up on Tuesday. Perhaps you got some holiday gifts, some gadgets or gizmos you'd like to talk about, get some help with. This is the place. 8888-ASK-LEO. I read an article in Quartz, which is normally a very good business website. I think it's QZ.com. What a great URL. I don't know how you get a two-letter domain name anymore. But this article in QZ in Quartz said this was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad year for technology, that nothing new happened. It was all a bunch of junk. Nothing to get excited about. Innovation is over. And I think that probably when you see something like that on a website, it's what we call link bait. It's really designed just to generate traffic to the website. Although, as I said, Quartz is normally a pretty serious, not such a link baity place, but this was seemed like a link baity article. And I had to think. I was thinking, well, did we do? Was it? Is that true? Was this 2013 just a waste of a year? Did nothing happen of interest in technology? And then I thought, no, actually, quite a lot happened of interest in technology this year. Of course, the biggest story this year broke in June, Edward Snowden and the leaks revealing that our government was not only spying on everybody else, but on us too. And that's been a hot debate. In fact, this week, we got conflicting opinions from federal judges, one who said it is illegal for the NSA to collect en masse all the phone records that they collect of us, our phone records. And then another judge said, no, that's completely legal. So certainly that was an interesting story. Not exactly a tech story, but kind of, because, of course, it was the eight tech giants, Microsoft and Apple and Facebook and Google and Yahoo. And there's a couple others in there who were incensed when they found out that the feds were tapping into communications going into and out of their servers. In fact, originally we thought that the feds actually were living in the servers, like parasites. But it turned out, no, that they had a better way. They were just collecting the data as it went into and out of Google's, Amazon's, Yahoo's, Microsoft's, Apple's servers. And the tech giants took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal saying, well, how dare you change this? We need more oversight. This was also the year, not a lost year for tech, as Quartz said, but the year that Google came out with Google Glass. That was interesting. I mean, I don't know if it's a revolution yet, but I think it's the beginning. I think we're seeing the beginning between the wristwatches like the Pebble Watch and the Samsung Galaxy Gear and the Glass from Google. Others say they're doing glasses too. of wearable computing. That's this next step, I think, in some ways. You kind of are wearing your smartphone, aren't you? If it's in your pocket, it's with you all the time. But even going even a little closer, that it's not only with you, but actually usable as you walk about hither and thither. That's a pretty big story at the beginning of a new form of computing. Because sometimes when it's early days, as it is with this, and it's hard to see the future. Remember the earliest smartphone? Remember the Palm Pilot and the Trio and the Visor? And it was, you know, these were kind of clunky. The Newton from Apple? These were kind of clunky personal digital assistants. People didn't really, I don't see any future. But you know, if you thought about it a little bit. And I remember I did a little piece, in fact, I think it's on YouTube somewhere, you know, 10, 15 years ago, saying, hey, you combine this Newton with a phone with always-on internet, maybe make it a little smaller, better battery life, you got something here. Yeah. That wasn't so ingenious. But that's what happens sometimes. You know, these new technologies, at first, if you look at them just on the surface, they're a little clunky. But I do think wearable computing is going to be a big story. There were some very interesting smartphones this year, weren't there? In fact, if anything, there were too many. It was confusing. It was overwhelming. The Samsung Galaxy S4 and all of its brethren. The Galaxy Note 3, the Apple 5S with a fingerprint reader built into the phone that actually worked. A couple of new iPads. A lot of new Android tablets. In fact, this was a banner year for Android. And then we learned that the guy who put Android together, Andy Rubin, is launching the next moonshot at Google. They call them moonshots, these kind of highly improbable, speculative R&D projects that could go to the moon and could maybe, you know, just fall back to Earth. The next moonshot from Google is robots. Oh, boy. Anybody who's seen the Terminator movies might be a little concerned. Google bought 8 robotics companies in 2013. 8. Count them, 8. That's what happens when you got big bucks. Yeah, we'll take that and I'll take that. And one of them was doing research for the Defense Department on military robots. So Google's got them. Oh, boy. This guy who writes the article for Quartz might look back and say, you know, 2013 was a pretty big year for technology. Not necessarily good, but big. One thing that was snuck under the radar in 2013 was Apple's iBeacon. I still don't think people really understand what's going on. It's based on Bluetooth, a form of Bluetooth called Bluetooth Low Energy, LE. That's not like your grandpa's Bluetooth. You know the Bluetooth where you have, you know, have something like an earbud and you have to earpiece, you have to pair it with your phone and you got to enter the number and it's all that complicated. No, Bluetooth LE, that's not, no, it's just, you know, it just sees it. It just sees it. And so these iBeacons, the idea is that you can go into a store or a museum or anywhere, and your phone will, your Bluetooth LE capable phone, which is mostly Apple, but some other stuff too. The HTC One, that's Kim Schaefer's new phone. The Galaxy S4, those have Bluetooth LE, would spot these iBeacons and light up. Doesn't have to pair and say, hey, I see that you're standing across from this fabulous Picasso. Let me tell you a little bit about it. Or, hey, you like those sneakers? Let me tell you a little bit about them. But here was the stealth thing that Apple revealed just a month ago. Every iPhone since the 4S, every iPad since the iPad 3, I think, it could be an iBeacon. Has the capability of not just receiving, but sending. So that you can walk into a merchant's and say, hey, I'm here. Give me that cup of coffee that I usually order, and thanks very much. Just take that out of my account. Or, well, they mentioned LeBron James' sneaker store in Miami. LeBron has a sneaker store, and every sneaker in that store has an iPad display telling you about the sneaker. Well, each and every one of those iPad displays is suddenly, with the push of a button, an iBeacon that could see you coming. I didn't say everything was good. I'm not saying, but I think these are important and interesting technological advances. Of course, this was also the year of the big data. That's part of the NSA story. The fact that you can take giant, ginormous, in the past, hitherto undigestible, unintelligible, giant pools of data, and now using fast, modern computer technology, sift through it and make all sorts of interesting inferences. This was the year that big data broke out. Yeah, that was an interesting year, wasn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the phone ranger, Heather Hammond, taking the day off. How dare she? But good news, Kim Schaefer's here filling in. Hi, Kim. Good to see you. Fire away. Do you have, I see you've lined up some wonderful callers for the show today.
Yes.
Who should I always give Heather the pride of choice here of which one she wants me to start with. Do you have one here that you'd
particularly... Well, Daniel wants to pick out a tablet PC for his wife, he needs some recommendations.
Yeah, I love spending people's money. Good choice. Thank you, Kim. Way. Hi, Daniel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how's it going, Leo? Dan from rainy and soggy New Jersey.
Ay. Not snow, huh? Not a snowy Christmas, more of a slushy Christmas.
More of a damp one. Yeah, well, we want to make it out to, you know, your neck of the woods, but is there anything good to do with kids in wine country? I guess there's...
Yeah, there's stuff to do. We got a little train town. Come see train. Just ride a little train around. Mom and Dad can have a glass of wine. The kids ride a train around. It's great.
All right, we'll have to look at the doing something. I figured, all the wineries and stuff like that, they should have almost like a kids' room.
They should, like they do in Vegas, don't they? They have kids' rooms so you could leave the kids and then go gamble. I think we need something like that out here.
Exactly. All right, well, either that or I'll have to wait till the kids are teenagers and can drink for themselves.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. It is a wonderful place to come out here and enjoy. And the climate's very nice and...
Yeah, I'm sure it's about 65 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Wonderful wine in Sonoma and Napa counties. But that's not why you're here.
That's not why I'm here, of course. Well, I'm actually looking at picking up a sort of a convergence tablet type device for my wife.
Yes. She wants to watch video on it? When you say convergence.
Yeah, you know what it is? She actually, she works at a company, mm-hmm. and a large company, mm-hmm. And they block all access to personal email and other types of personal services from their office computers.
As is their right. You are at work, after all.
Yeah, but I mean, look, you know, if let's say you're going to eat at your desk, you know, is it the worst thing in the world?
Now, I should warn you, you could buy a device, unless it has its own internet connection, you may still be blocked because the company may block all traffic on its
network. Yeah, no, actually, they do have a public Wi-Fi network that she can log on to.
And she's tried it and knows that she can use that to do
it. Yeah, well, she's tried it with her iPhone.
Good, okay.
But, you know, obviously doing it on your own. Like, if you want to, like, for instance, before you head home, run the nanny's payroll records on your iPhone, you're kind of going to be stuck.
Yeah. So she wants a browser. Go ahead.
Yeah, she loves to be able to have, like, a tablet-type device. And so we first, of course, look at the new iPads, right? I mean, these things are great-looking.
Yeah.
But the reality is she really wants the ability to run full versions of, like, you know, basically Microsoft Office on an as-needed basis. So it kind of puts you a little bit into a quandary almost.
There are excellent Windows tablets. In fact, people really like the Dell Venue, V-E-N-U.
Venue Pro. How do you think that compares to, let's say, the Surface, or I think Sony's got one as well, the Sony Tap? I mean, I guess the downside with these, and tell me what you think about it, is that you're sort of locked into the Windows App Store, whatever they call that, which...
You're not. Okay, so there's two kinds of... This is very confusing. Microsoft did not help anybody by doing this. There's two kinds of Windows. There's Windows RT. That's what the Surface 2 is. And there's Windows 8 Pro. That's what the Surface 2 Pro is. You see the Pro in the Dell Venue. That means it's full Windows. So you can run any Windows app there, including desktop apps.
Right. No, I mean, obviously you can do your desktop apps, but then when you want to run, let's just say, basic apps, if you would call it, like, you want to download.
You can download an app from anywhere on there. You're not stuck with a store. You're only stuck with a store on Windows RT.
Right, but I mean, in other words, you can't run an iOS or an Android.
Oh, no. Well, they have to be Windows. Same thing on an Apple. You can't run, you know, Windows on your iPad. Well, you kind of can, but
yeah. Well, I mean, so that's the thing. I mean, all her apps that she uses right now are iOS. Android device, and the store's got millions of apps between those two.
Yeah.
And Windows just doesn't have that same capability in terms of the actual app side of the house. So I heard some rumors. I mean, tell me if you think that these have any level of substantiation, but I heard some rumors that some folks up in Redmond are considering basically putting out Android.
Yeah, there was a brief rumor that Nokia which Microsoft is purchasing, the Nokia phone business, that Nokia was considering putting Android on one of its phones. That right. was so later. That was later poo-pooed, and I think it's highly unlikely.
Right. So you don't think that, like, if I wait 6 months on this, I could have a full-blown Windows, you know, PC running on a tablet device that went in tablet mode.
You have to choose. You have to choose. This is the you live in a world where you've got to pick a team. You can't root for the Raiders and the Niners. You can't root for the Patriots and the Giants. You have to pick a team. Is it Apple? Is it Microsoft? Is it Google? Whose team? It is a shame, isn't it, that we have to do that? Now there are some ways around this. For instance, there's an application called BlueStacks that you can run on Windows that will let you run many, not all, but many Android apps in a window on Windows, and actually works quite well. It's best for games like Angry Birds and stuff, but you can do that. So you have to decide what's most important to you. Is it running the Windows apps, or is it running the Android apps or the iOS apps? Pick that device, and then you can sort of, for instance, there are a number of apps you can run on iOS that let you run Windows. Not well. But you know, if there's one thing you got to do, so you got to decide what your main app or your main OS is, and then get a tablet for that. So let me give you a couple of good choices. Certainly, if you want to get work done, you should get a Windows tablet. I mean, really, like, this is like I need a laptop, and the Surface is very good. You'd want to get the Surface Pro, Surface 2 Pro, not the Surface 2, because you want to get Windows, full Windows, not the RT version. That'll give you more capabilities. It's also more expensive. And as I said, there are other companies, Lenovo, Dell, Asus, who make very nice Windows Pro tablets. Frankly, I kind of like Windows RT if you don't need heavy-duty. For instance, the Nokia 2520. It's a small tablet. Looks kind of like an iPad. It's beautifully, elegantly made. Great battery life. And it is Windows RT, which means it's mostly, you know, that Metro Tile World interface. But it does have a desktop for one reason only, so you can have Microsoft Office. So it comes with a full version of Microsoft Office for the desktop, just like on Windows. But you can't install any other Windows apps. And it doesn't yet have a keyboard. They're making it when it comes out. Then you'll have kind of like a little laptop, and not a bad choice. When it comes to if you say I want to go with Android, for instance, I was almost going to say the Kindle Fire HDX, which has a beautiful screen, is really made for watching movies, TV, reading books. It's an Amazon device, so it's made for doing the stuff you do on Amazon. Now, the truth is you can do all the same things on an iPad because Amazon does make a Kindle app for the iPad. You can have the Amazon movie app on the iPad, Amazon Music app. So I understand your conundrum, your quandary, because it's kind of there's a lot of choice. In fact, if I'd say one thing about 2013, it was too many choices. It's very confusing to consumers, and Microsoft did not help anybody by releasing Windows 8 in three flavors: Windows Phone, Windows RT, and Windows Pro. None of which are compatible with the other. But they look the same, they work the same, but they're not compatible with one another. So I can't really tell you what to get. I think I would look at the Dell Venue Pro 8. That is inexpensive and nice. I'll tell you where you can read some reviews. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. I got to say this, I mean, with the one big tech story of the year, if you eliminate the NSA and the spying, which isn't exactly a tech story, is confusion. Ball of confusion. There is too much stuff, and there's too many good things like good smartphones, good tablets, good laptops. It's confusing. I look back with nostalgia to the year 2008 when if you wanted a good smartphone, you had to buy an iPhone. If you wanted a good tablet in 2010, there was only the iPad. Now there's many choices, and they're all pretty good. They're all different. So I sympathize. It's difficult. If difficult, you want to buy, as Dan does, his wife a tablet, it's challenging. Somebody in the chat room did mention, yes, there are companies that make kind of a weird hybrid thing. We've not seen very many of these. We saw them last year and the year before at CES, and I don't think we see as many this year. That the tablet is an Android tablet, but you dock it on a keyboard and suddenly it's a Windows computer. That's crazy. I don't understand that. It's confusing. I'm thinking you kind of have to look at how you use it. Now, one thing decide, you know, based this goes back to the old days of computing where somebody said, well, I need a computer. What should I get? And then the first question I'd always ask is, well, what are you going to do with it? And we're kind of back in those days in a way, you know. It was a brief moment where there was a clear choice. Now it's no, I don't know. Tablet, I don't know. There's a lot of them. And the story of the year that I left out, and it's kind of just starting to form, to, you know, this week, is the Chromebook. This is the Google device. It looks, for all intents and purposes, like a laptop. It's kind of like a netbook. You know, remember those very inexpensive couple hundred, $300 cheap Windows, you know, often XP devices that were popular a few years ago, chiefly because of price. Well, Google, it makes these things. Now, Samsung, HP, Acer, and others are making them. Called Chromebooks, and it's a very strange device because it's really just a browser. There is an operating system, but you don't have access to it in that same way. If you install an app, you can't install just an app. You install it as a Chrome extension. So you can only do what Chrome, the browser, can do with Chrome extensions. They don't usually have much storage, often just 16 gigabytes. I have to smile when I say that because I remember when 2 gigabytes was a giant hard drive on a PC, but they only have 16 gigabytes, hardly any storage, because you're supposed to store and do everything in the cloud, in the internet. In fact, you've probably seen Microsoft's ads. Remember they got the Pawn Stars? That's not a computer. What happens when the internet goes away? It's a piece of junk. I can't give you any money for that. Well, now we understand why Microsoft was so worried about these things. According to NPD, through November, 14 million computers are sold. Desktops, notebooks, and tablets. We're going to include all three. That was a big increase, by the way, over last year. 25% increase. Notebooks grew 28.9%. Desktop sales, 8%. Tablets, 49%. Windows notebooks, zero growth. Zero growth. Windows desktops, 10% increase. Apple sales, notebooks, and desktops fell 7%. What were people buying in 2013? They were buying Chromebooks. Chromebooks and Android tablets had the biggest impact on sales growth. Chromebooks, they're barely a notebook. It's just a browser. 21% of all notebook sales. The best-selling laptops of 2013 were Chromebooks. And Android suddenly started taking over from iPad. Android tablets, 8% of all computer and tablet sales through November. I'm sorry, 22% of all personal computing devices were tablets. Android tablet sales grew in 2013 160%. And this doesn't include any holiday shopping, really. This is just through November. So the market changed dramatically in 2013. Now, it remains to be seen why people are buying Chromebooks. Do you tell me when you go to the store and you look at a Chromebook, do you know what you're getting? You know that that's just a browser, right? And that if you know there's no Microsoft Office on there. You use Google Docs as your word processor, as your spreadsheet. It's in the cloud. You use Gmail as your mail. You could do things like video and audio editing, but very difficultly with a browser extension, basically. So my question is, do people know that and still say, yeah, I want that? Or are they just saying, hey, honey, it's $250. Let's get it. How many of you, this is a question for you, how many of you took home a Chromebook in 2013 and got it home and said, what? Is this all I can do with it? Did you know what you were getting? Or did you just choose based on price? Now, let me tell you the pros. It's a great student computer. Because mostly what a student does these days is what? Get on the internet, do research on the internet, and write papers. You got a full keyboard. You've got a word processor. Everything's stored in the cloud. So the kid goes to school, forgets his Chromebook. Doesn't matter. He can access it at the school's computers. Many, many schools. In fact, I suspect a lot of these sales are to schools. Very affordable. Security's great. No viruses. No security issues at all. If something goes wrong on a Chromebook, you reboot it, pressing and holding a button down, and it starts from scratch, all over, all fresh, all neat, new and clean, and it does it in a minute. So I'm curious, if you bought a Chromebook this year, did you know what you were getting? Are you happy with what you got? Or was it just a case of, oh, honey, look, this one's $250. Let's take it. For a school, it makes a lot of sense in terms of maintaining it, in terms of security. And you don't have to worry about the kids playing Call of Duty on it because they can't. The best they can do is a little Angry Birds. You know, casual gaming, a little Plants vs. Zombies. In our chat room, Talking One says, I heart my Samsung Chromebook. Perfect couch surfing, on the road email. Yeah, I think if you knew what you were getting, I call my Chromebook my breakfast computer. Because I have it on the breakfast table, and I sit down with my bowl of Cap'n Crunch, and then I can browse the news. I can, you know, do, it's really a consumption device. I wouldn't want to write a term paper on it. Maybe. 8888, ask Leah. So maybe, Dan, you should look at a Chromebook. Very inexpensive. Probably the best, you know, HP had to recall theirs because the power supply was overheating, but those were very nice. I imagine they're back on the market. Acer makes a nice one. And, of course, you can get the equivalent of the Swarovski bejeweled Chromebook, the Bling Chromebook. It's $1,500, Google's Pixel. It's solid aluminum case, and it's a touch screen. Probably not a sensible purchase. It's cost more than a lot of Windows machines. 8888, ask Leah. Let's go to Ben in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
I'm a long-time listener.
Thank you.
Hey, I've heard you talk a couple of times about the 3-2-1 backup methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing that right now.
Good. And credit, by the way, to my friend photographer Peter Krogh, who thought that up. You know, photographers especially, they don't want to lose any pictures, you know. You don't want a bridezilla coming to your home saying, where are my wedding pictures?
Well, today I'm using a program from IBM called Tivoli's Continuous Data Protection.
Oh, that's serious stuff. Yeah. That's enterprise grade.
Well, that's my background. Anyway, so I back up from one hard drive to another hard drive, and then I have an external USB drive that's TrueCrypted, and that's my, quote, network backup, and I keep that in my car.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So you're solving, you've got three copies, two different forms. This is what 3-2-1 is. Three copies, two different forms of media, just in case, because one of them is unreadable. Like if you put them on zip disks, it'd be good that you also had it on a hard drive, for instance. And then finally, and this is the most important one, one off-site. That's the one you bring in your car.
Yeah.
Magic music's coming. So your question will come after this break. I'm sorry to do that to you, but we have to. Network rules and all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech man. We'll be celebrating our 10th anniversary next week. 10 years as the tech guy. I've been doing the show or a call-in talk show about computers for more than 20, but 10 years as the tech guy, thanks to the great folks at the home office, KFI in Los Angeles, a 50,000-watt blowtorch in Southern California. And their wonderful program director, Robin Bertolucci, who 10 years in is still there, which shows she's really good. Program directors do not last 10 years. She's still got the number one station because she's good and she was smart and she hired me. So thank you, Robin. 10th anniversary next week. The first show we did was at the Consumer Electronics Show in 2004. And I am not going to do a show from CES this year because it's crazy. Also, it's in the middle of the week. But, wow, that's an event. That is an event. It is coming up not next week, but the week after. And not this week, but next week. Should be exciting. And that's where we're going to see a lot of new stuff. A lot of it does not come out. That's the only problem with going to CES. You look at this stuff and you go, oh, that's cool. Never emerges. A lot of it is just really the electronics industry saying, if we made this, would you buy it? And then waiting to see what people say. What do you think of this? It's kind of Kickstarter for the entire electronics industry. Would you buy this? No. Remember last year we spent a lot of time showing the Happy Fork? It was a force feedback fork that would buzz when you'd eat too much food. From HAPI.com. Ah, yeah, they are selling it. I don't know why. Can't imagine anybody's buying it. But so you see a lot of stuff like that. You have vibrating forks, weird stuff. But what we will do, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, will be there. He will go down and take a look at TVs. That should be interesting. And we're going to try to find like the top 10 products from CES. So I'll have that, not next week, but the weekend after. We were interrupted talking with Ben. He's walking in Memphis. Hi, Ben.
Hey there.
In enterprise type. Now, are you running, there's, IBM has Tivoli for enterprise, but somebody said in the chat room there's a Tivoli for just consumer version of Tivoli. Is there?
Yeah, that was me that said that. It's a workstation version. It's about $50.
Really? And yeah. What does it do?
Well, it's kind of like the Windows Shadow Copy.
Every I love that.
Every time you change something, it copies, you know, the before copy of it.
It keeps versions in effect.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a great way to, it's kind of the best way to back up because, frankly, a lot of the reason you back up is not because of disaster, but because you inadvertently threw out a file or you made changes to a file, saved it, and went, whoa, wait a minute, and you want to go back. So the idea of versioning, having previous versions is great. Apple's Time Machine does that too. I think it's a very nice thing. So what can I do for you?
Well, I've got the backup store on a second internal hard drive. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the off-site is a TrueCrypted drive I keep in the trunk of my car. But I want to go to a net-based backup. And I've looked at the Carbonite, and I understand, you know, their cloud implications. But I don't know that I need the cloud. And so what I'm looking at is CrashPlan's Code 42 method. Have you seen that or familiar with it?
Tell me about it. I don't. And I should say Carbonite is a sponsor, so...
I understand. That's why I've looked at
it. But I always am honest. So Code 42, the idea is what?
You can provide your own...
Give them a drive.
Storage.
Yeah.
Well, you can give them a drive, and you can do that and load it into their cloud. Well, what I'm looking at doing is taking an external USB drive and in my home site, seeding it with my current state. And then taking it 20 miles away to my mother's house, installing that in the CrashPlan, and attach that through CrashPlan back to my home PC so that the deltas transfer over the Internet. They've got encryption.
So the idea is this is free because you provide the drive, and I would guess because you're sharing some of that drive space with other users. Is that right?
No, this is my personal drive. I would take my personal drive here and take it to my mother's house.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really understand this Plan 40 or Code 42. I don't get what you download the backup. You select a local drive, a trusted computer, the CrashPlan cloud, and you start and it does backup. Now, they say it's free, but how could that be free? What do they ever charge you for anything?
Well, they have a cloud offering.
I see. So if you're just using their free software to back up locally, I get it.
Well, initially to back up locally and create a seed of data.
Right.
So I've got about 200 gigs, so I'll back it up to a...
See, this is... Okay, so this is a clever idea, and I think Carbonite has something similar. The idea being, when it's that much data, 200 gigs, the prospect of trickling it up to the cloud, it would take months. And so it's just not practicable. So what they say is, well, just put it all on a local drive and then send it to us. You know, if you think about it, a FedEx truck has more bandwidth. So overnighting a hard drive is a lot more bandwidth than your home internet.
For sure.
So that's not a bad idea. I don't fully understand what the Code 42 offering is. I'll have to look into it. But it's sounds like it's both local and if you want cloud storage. Is that right?
There's a cloud option,
but
I'm not planning on starting with the cloud option. I may do some of it with that, but Carbonite really does a good job with that. It's, as you suggested, it's the bulk of the data that I'm looking at to avoid having to upload on the Internet.
200 gigs, it's just not practicable. And there are people with more than that, and that's just not practicable.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, then in that case, what you're just saying is CrashPlan good backup software? And I don't know. I mean, any program, you're obviously a sophisticated user, any program that's going to do a versioned sync like Tivoli from one drive to another drive is going to be a good choice. And it could even be something as low level as rsync. It could be, there are a lot of choices for, in other words. Back when Jungle Disk was an independent company, I loved Jungle Disk. They used Amazon Web Service, Rackspace bought them, and they kind of lost their mojo. But there are lots of ways to do this kind of thing. I haven't used the CrashPlan program, so I don't know if it's great or not.
Okay.
It seems, try it. Now, my question would be, it's a synchronization program so that your backup this is what I don't like, is a hairball you can't look into. It is individual files, right, that you could then check and make sure they were backed up.
Yes, and with the free offering, unlike the cloud offering, which backs up continuously, the free offering, as I read it, only backs up once a day, which is good enough for backup.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing versioning, it's not. Because versioning, the whole point of having multiple versions is that one time when you saved the file inadvertently with no data. Everybody's done that. You do Command-A, you select everything, accidentally hit backspace, and then you save it. You just saved a blank file, and you've eliminated all your work. That's when continuous versioning is great.
Well, I don't plan to suspend the use of my Tilly.
Good. You're going to continue to use that. That's the way to you nailed it. The key, Ben, is to not rely on any single thing, but to have multiple paths, multiple ways of doing it. So if you're doing versioning and then do a daily backup, that's fine. That's fine, absolutely. Okay. I'll download Code 42 and take a look at it. It's nice that it's free. I like that. You know, that's a good start. And then it looks fairly similar to the Carbonite offering in terms of the varieties of cloud choices. So yep. I'll give it a try. And you know what? Okay. Let me know too, Ben, how you like it.
Okay.
I appreciate
that. We've got some offline connections. I'll get back to you through them.
Excellent. Yeah, and I see you in the chat room. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Another question related to you and Steve as well, if I got time.
Yeah, sure.
You talk about the VPN for the Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yes.
And I'm familiar with that. But that seems like it leaves the rest of the Wi-Fi adapter traffic open to the local hotspot. So the only thing that's protected is the data that's going out over the VPN connection.
What happens? So I think what you're saying is you're still on a network, and somebody could hack into your system via that network. You're not protected on the network. But right. Any traffic going out of your computer is encrypted.
What I'm looking for is to be able to do a NAT between my Wi-Fi adapter and the hotspots.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that. I used to, when I traveled, I'd bring a small portable Wi-Fi router. This is when hotels used to always have Ethernet. I'd plug it into the Ethernet of the hotel and have Wi-Fi. And then you've got a router in between you and the outside world. That's a great way to do it. Lots of ways to do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour number two of the Tech Guy radio program is underway. This is a show where we answer questions about technology. We share insights, your thoughts, your fears, your hopes, your plans for 2014. The phone number 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, but we do get calls from all over the world thanks to the Internet. And you can use your internet calling device, Skype or whatever, to call that number. It'll be toll-free. We also have a great chat room. You can join us in chat, be the kids in the back of the class hurling spitballs or whatever. Please, no paperclips. That is through our website, techguylabs.com. In fact, techguylabs.com is the bookmark you should make because that, you know, if you hear something on the show or I mention an article or a website or a product, that all of that stuff is linked at the website. Thanks to James DeRuvo. Merry Christmas, James, who's been writing everything I say down. And Josh Windisch, who then adds audio and video and chops it up into little salad-like pieces. TechGuyLabs.com. Everything's there, including the chat room, the phone number, and all the answers, all the questions, audio and video, too. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go on with another call, and that will be from Pennsylvania. Kevin is on the line. Hi, Kevin. Leo Laporte. Oh, we lost Kevin. That's what that punk means, I think, right? Mm-hmm. You say I should go to line four? Hi, David in Juniper Hills.
Yes.
Leo Laporte, how are you?
I'm doing great. I love your show. I have a two-part question for you.
All right.
I have the maximum allowable data usage on my internet plan, and when I use Netflix and I'm watching a movie, I'm one of those people that likes to rewind and watch a scene maybe one or two times, and maybe several scenes will have that happen where I want to go back. Is it downloading the entire movie every time I...
No, well, it depends. And you can kind of tell when you're using the rewind on Netflix. It caches that movie as it's downloading it. So if you're rewinding, you know, kind of locally and you're doing it in a reasonable amount of time, no, you don't have to re-download. But it's not going to store the whole movie because that's gigabytes. So at some point, it's going to have to go back and get it. And you can kind of tell because some of it, you can do it right away. And sometimes it'll take a while, right? That's the when it takes a while, it's downloading.
Yes, and almost every time it seems to take a while. And sometimes I'll want to watch the end of a certain episode of a movie off of Netflix. And am I downloading the entire episode to watch the very last 10 minutes?
No. So think of the file on Netflix. Think of the movie as a file. When you're streaming anything, video, audio, whatever, you're in effect downloading it to play it. But you're just not saving it to the drive. You're just downloading it. So think of the movie that as a big chunk. You can, with the Netflix player, jump to any part of the movie without downloading everything before it. So you can it literally sends a – in fact, this works with YouTube and other things too. Most players will do this now. It literally just goes to that point and says, start downloading here.
I see. One last question, please, Leo.
Yes, sir.
I am developing a smartphone application – that is called Typecast, and I want to know how is the best way to find an app developer here in America. I'm talking with people in India, and
there are a lot of programmers out of work, underemployed programmers in Russia, India, China, who are very, very good. Nothing wrong with them. But if you want to use an American person, I recommend Elance. You can say. You can get Elancers all over the world, but you can say, I'm only going to hire a U.S.-based freelancer. There's lots of reasons people might want to do that, time zone, language, and so forth. Elance is a great place to go for freelancers in a variety of areas. There are 27,300 mobile developers there, according to the Elance page. So one of them will probably do the job for you. 233,000 programmers. They've got designers, writers, people who do marketing. It is a great site, one of the best sites for hiring programmers. Good luck on the mobile. You know, this seems like a gold rush right now, right? Everybody looks at Instagram, $1 billion. Snapchat offered $3 billion and turned it down. This seems like there's a gold rush. If you could just make the next big mobile app, you're going to be a billionaire. The problem is there's a million mobile apps and more coming all the time. So it's very competitive. Really, getting success in mobile is very much like having a YouTube video reach 5 million viewers. You got to go viral, right? And often things go viral. Look at what goes viral. Tends to be stuff kids like. Certainly true on YouTube. Because kids, you know, they got this network. They'll tell their friends. Everybody in a school will download it. Then it gets to another school and everybody there will download it. There's just these kind of natural networks that happen among young people. And so Snapchat, it's big among the kids. Vine, big among the kids. Instagram, big among the kids. In fact, that's why they're getting these big bucks for these apps. Everybody, Facebook, Google, everybody wants kids. They want the young. If you can lock people in and they're young, you have a chance of keeping them for a long time. You lock an older person in, yeah, you got 20 years maybe, then you got to find new customers. Coming up, by the way, at 33 and a third after the hour, digital photography guru Chris Marquardt, a little photo bus myth busting. Larry's in Loma Linda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Well, I'm pretty computer illiterate, but I've got this icon that's popped up down in the lower left corner along with the Windows and the Internet Explorer. It's a blue and gold shield that's flashing, and if I click on that, it comes up with a window that says, do you want to allow the following program from an unknown publisher, etc., and its program name is Java, and it has yes or no. I click no, and both that and the icon disappear for a few minutes, and then a few minutes later, the icon's back on again.
Yeah, this is a could be completely benign, could be a cause for concern. Java is a Java is an internet programming language that needs to run for some programs. Probably something that you tried to use online needed Java. Your system is set up properly to ask your permission before Java will run. And there's a good reason for that. Anything that runs on command automatically from the browser is potentially risky.
Right.
Flash, PDF readers, Java especially. Because the bad guys quickly learned that Microsoft was keeping Windows up to date. And the browsers were being kept up to date. We can't attack you that way anymore. So most recently, almost all the attacks involve these third-party programs that people are not updating very much, like Java, like Flash, like Shockwave, like PDF, like Adobe Reader. And they'll use those as a way to get malware onto your system. So most systems now very correctly do what yours is doing, saying, hey, somebody's trying to run Java. Do you really want to do that? What you need to do now is find out, well, who is doing that? Why is Java starting to pop up?
Well, it says publisher unknown. So
yeah, that bothers me. Yeah. Publisher should be Oracle. Or you're on a Windows machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you reboot the machine, this thing just comes right back?
Right.
Yeah, it bothers me a little bit. Fortunately, you're probably okay because Java won't run. This thing won't run. Keep saying no. What they count on is you saying yes. Finally going, oh, I give up.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this anymore. So you were right to call, and you're right to click no. But now you're going to have to get a computer guru in there or do it yourself, figure out what is going on. And I'll tell you a tool that will help you. You can download from Microsoft. It's very easy to use, and it's free. It's called Auto Runs from Microsoft. It will tell you what programs are running automatically when you boot up. Because the fact that this pops up even when you reboot tells me something is running. So
right.
this is from Microsoft's TechNet page. Make sure you get it from Microsoft. It's free. It's small. It's 538K. And it will let you figure out what is it that's trying to get Java going. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. Give us a call. We shall talk. You and I. We shall talk high tech. Chris is in Cerritos, California. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. This is I'm a college student right now, and my dad's wanting to buy me a laptop.
Nice, nice.
I know.
Sweet.
It's awesome. As a poor college student, my dad's willing to buy it. I hit the jackpot. So, I actually want a Windows 7. That's the catch.
Oh yeah, you can still get them.
I know, but the problem is that here's my dad's theory. My dad's a computer engineer, and he says you get the best right now. And so when you have to upgrade later, you'll have the best then, so then you don't run out of, everything else that you
if
need.
If Dad is buying, I would get Windows. And he's insisting on Windows 8, get Windows 8.
Oh, no. No Windows 8. I cannot stand Windows 8. I am so sorry.
Wait a minute. So Dad is saying you should get Windows 8?
No, he says no Mac. I want a Mac, but that.
Oh, I get it. You want a Mac. Dad says, no, you must buy Windows.
Yes.
Hey, he's paying. What the heck?
Yeah, right. So
here's what you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Get a computer, then bring it to the campus bookstore and trade it in for a Mac.
Our campus bookstore. I'm currently going to community college.
All right. He'll know. He'll know.
Yeah,
darn it.
Yeah.
That only works if you're living far, far away.
Yes. Very true.
Oh, I know what you do. Tell Dad.
Uh-huh.
The best, look it up, Walt Mossberg, Wall Street Journal, the best Windows computer is a Mac. Dad, you told me to get the best. Let me explain this to you, Dad. There's only one kind of computer that will run both Macintosh OS X, Unix, and Windows. Only one. It's called Macintosh.
So I have a 2008 iMac.
Right.
And he has an HP that is, I call it the sinking ship.
Don't get an HP.
It's filled with everything that you don't want. So I'm saying, look, my 2008 Mac, iMac, is still running perfectly. I mean, there is nothing that I've done with it.
Yeah, but dude, I don't think you're going to win this argument. Dad's writing the check, right?
Yeah. He's a computer engineer, he knows I don't know why he's saying no Mac.
Yeah, well, that's not an unusual prejudice amongst old school engineering types.
Well, he has an iPhone in his pocket.
What are you studying in school? I'm trying to help you here. What are you studying in school?
Business administration.
Oh, crud. Yeah. See, Windows, if I look across the way at our business office, Dell, because they're doing QuickBooks. You can't even, it's so sad. The QuickBooks, the old QuickBooks we used, you couldn't even log into with Firefox or Chrome. You have to use Internet Explorer 8 on Windows 7.
Yes.
So in the world of business, unfortunately, Excel is king. Internet Explorer rules all, and Windows dominates. So Dad might be right, at least for your major.
Yeah, but you know,
but remember, you can always run Windows on a Mac. Boot Camp, it runs beautifully. In fact, when we needed to access QuickBooks at home, I take my Mac Pro and I reboot it into Windows 7.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a beautiful Windows 7 machine. It's running smooth. I go into QuickBooks. Works fine. I couldn't even, I have a Windows 8 notebook, and I couldn't even get into QuickBooks on that. I had to reboot the Mac and the Windows 7 to get into QuickBooks. So tell Dad, look, the best Windows computer, Walt Mossberg, the best Windows computer is a Macintosh.
Yeah.
Tell him it's a high-end Windows machine.
Yeah, but he's stuck in his way.
So let me tell you what you should get. There are a number of very good. I think if you're going to get Windows 8, you want touchscreen. This is one advantage you'll have. You can't get touchscreen on a Mac. I happen to like the Acer S7. It's super thin and light. It's fairly affordable. It's an what we call an ultrabook. Depends on what the dad's budget is. Dad's an engineer, so if you say, "Dad, I want the Lenovo ThinkPad Carbon Touch," he'll go, "Son, I've raised you right." And he won't look at the fact that it's going to cost him a pretty penny. But
let me just tell you the budget. It's up to $1,000.
This one's $1,189. Tell him, "Dad, you told me to get the best. You told me to get the best. The ThinkPad Ultra Carbon X1 is really nice ultrabook. Really nice ultrabook. It's very light. You want it light, right? You want an ultrabook, I'm sure.
Yeah. Very light.
Dell also makes ultrabooks, but my favorites are the Acer S7, which is beautiful. That's a little over your budget. The best probably be the ThinkPad X1 Carbon. Gorgeous.
We actually went to the notebook shop.
Really? They're still around. Yeah. Good. Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
We live like 4 blocks away from there.
That's a great little place. Yeah. Well, they'll help steer you to the right direction.
So
yoga would be somebody's mentioning the yoga. That's kind of nice for a convertible. I think there are a lot of good choices out there. Dad's paying. Just put, you put a Start 8 or a Classic Shell on there. It looks just like Windows 7. You boot into desktop. Choke it down. Maybe a little later, if Dad stops paying attention, you can Hackintosh it. That means putting, this is not illegal or even very easy to do, but you can't put the Mac software on a Windows machine. Yeah, the best way to go is to get a Mac and then put Windows on it, and then you have both.
I tried explaining that to him. He still is very stubborn in his ways. So,
hey, Dad's paying. Dad gets to, he writes the check and he tells you what way to go. The S7 is as low as $930 on Amazon.
Okay. S7. And he also says don't get a smaller screen because then, you'll get a smaller keyboard. So, I was thinking we went to the notebook shop and they recommended Lenovo. That was really nice.
Yeah.
And we didn't like it because that had Windows 8 on it. And we asked them, is there any way where we could downgrade it to, not technically downgrade.
They may not do it, but if you go to Dell, you can buy it with Windows 7 installed. There are a few companies, Lenovo too. They're still, if you go to the Lenovo site, they're still selling it with Windows 7.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to tell them that.
It's okay. It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a shiny new computer. Dad's paying for it. The truth is the difference between a Mac and a PC at this point is mostly personal preference.
Yeah, personal opinion,
It isn't that big a difference.
Yeah.
Now record this. And the other great thing, Chris, about buying a Windows machine, it's the best gaming platform. Forget school. You'll be playing Call of Duty till all hours of the morning. Dad's doing you a favor. He's buying you a gaming machine. Just play that for
him. I don't game. He knows that.
Shh. I'm trying to help you here, man.
In the room.
I think you're just going to have to bite the bullet and let Dad, he who pays, plays. He's gonna tell you which way to go. It's not that bad. You'll survive. I don't know how you can not be a gamer. Maybe we should. Oh no, that would be corrupting youth. I think that's illegal in 15 states. Teach them how to game. That would be a mistake. 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, right after this. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. Leo Laporte, the tech. Kodak took away our Kodachrome. Thank you, Kodak.
Well, they still have a few other films out there.
They still make film. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt's here, our digital photography guru. What was your very first camera? Do you remember, Chris? Like when you were a kid?
It was some tiny point-and-shoot
I had
thing
an Instamatic. Did you ever see those? Or are you too young to
yes,
remember
Yes, absolutely.
Those?
We had them here. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think mine had... No, actually, I wanted one with a big red button, but I never got one. And I think that was an Instamatic, but not really sure about that. So I took horrible pictures in the beginning.
I still have a few. I loved my Instamatic. It was terrible pictures because I think it was probably a plastic fixed-focus lens. It had a big button, yes.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't red.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't red.
I think my dad had one of those, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crappy camera. Mm-hmm. But then it also had, and I'm trying to remember, I think the first flashes I had were the flash cubes.
Oh, yeah. The four flash bulbs in a cube.
Yeah.
And then it rotates whenever you advance the film.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I might have gone.
You know how these work?
How do they work?
Those little bulbs are filled with steel wool and oxygen. And as soon as you make a spark, which is what the camera does when it flashes, that whole steel wool kind of goes up in a big burst of flame in oxygen. It's pretty much pure oxygen in these things.
Wow. And that is a very... Now, people don't still use flash bulbs of any kind, do they?
Well, you can still get them used. I'm not sure anyone makes them, but on flea markets or on eBay, you still can get them. They're still around.
I wish now, I had some of those old pictures.
No control
pictures.
Over the output.
They
no
look
control
terrible.
Over the output, though. Yeah,
no.
It's just boom, massive burst
boom.
Of light.
Bright.
Nowadays, when a flash goes off, it measures how much light there is, and it sets its level automatically. Those things are awfully smart these days.
Those old flashes weren't very much different from the gunpowder flashes that they used in the old days of Daguerre. You know, remember they put your head under a hood, and then they'd hold it up, say, smile at the birdie, and poof. Poof.
Yes, and you
pretty
were blinded for 5 days. Yeah,
yeah exactly. Anyway, I just was curious. You know, I think a lot of kids probably over the holidays got their first camera under the tree. And boy, it's a lot better than our first cameras.
Yes, but still, photographers are still very intimidated. In your early days of photography, have you ever taken a great picture? And then you thought that wasn't that great just because there were so many people with better cameras
yeah,
around you and things?
All the time.
Just the other day, I got a comment on my website. And let me read that to you. It says, OMG, what unbelievable great photos everyone here is taking. I love photography and I thought I was doing pretty good with my new camera.
Until I saw your pictures.
But after looking at these pictures, I feel quite intimidated.
Yep.
And
that,
the answer to that is...
I could have written that post.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I get a lot of that, especially after Christmas when lots of people have new cameras and they mm-hmm. start shooting and then they are actually intimidated by someone next to them with whatever, a bigger lens, a blacker camera, something.
My mom told me there'll always be somebody with a bigger lens, honey. Don't take it personal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my answer to that is don't be intimidated. There's no reason mm-hmm. whatsoever. And I'm not saying that to make people just feel better, but no, there is an actual reason behind it. If you look at how people develop new photographers when they start off, they have pretty much no ballast, no knowledge about photography. They take pictures from the gut and they will occasionally get a great picture. They might not be able to explain why that was a great picture or how they did it, but they will take great pictures as well. And then you know, over time you learn more about composition, about rules and things, and that's when typically the quality of your photography starts going down a bit. And then people...
What? Wait a minute. As you learn rules, your quality goes down?
Well, you know, because then all of a sudden you start sticking to rules, and every picture is a rule of thirds picture. Yeah. And so they get kind of boring.
Less spontaneous, maybe.
They don't have that freshness anymore. Yeah. And then after people start having those rules down and the technique down, then they will kind of almost automate some of those things, and then they will start switching their brain off again and kind of go back to the gut, back to shooting from the gut. And then in the last stage, photographers will just learn to let go, ignore the rules, shoot from the gut, do whatever feels right. But that feeling is then informed through years of photography and of learning about it. But a lot of photographers who just got their new camera, they will still shoot good pictures. Maybe not as many, maybe not as consistently, maybe not as repeatable, but they will still shoot great pictures every now and then. So just the one thing I want to say to photographers out there today, trust your gut. If you take a good picture, even if you can't explain why it's a good picture, if it feels right, don't be afraid to share. Don't be afraid to say, to stand up and say, I've taken a great picture. Here it is. I've printed it out. I'm hanging it up on the wall. I love what I've done. If you feel a picture is good, then it probably is.
I can give you the worst case of that. You probably remember Mikkel Olland, who's a professional photographer, invited me as the mascot to go to Tasmania with 20 of the best photographers in the world. And I'm there with this a few years ago. He was writing a book called Adobe Lightroom Adventure. The second volume was to Tasmania. And so I'm taking pictures, and I took what I thought were some very good pictures. But when a time came to pick one, you know, they knew they had to put one of my pictures in the book. They put a picture. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite picture. And I just felt like, gosh, I've just put those pictures away. I never looked at them again. But I looked at them the other day, and I took some great pictures. I'm proud of those pictures. They're fine.
I'm sure about that. And you know, if you thought that picture wasn't a special picture, but if the others thought it was a special picture, then sometimes it's really hard even to judge your own photography.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything. These professional photographers picked it, okay, I guess it's okay.
You know why that is? Because you are connected to that picture in a very different way.
Yes.
Than you are super prejudiced.
Yes.
Because you were there. You had all the sounds. You had all the smells. Yes. You had all the surroundings and everything. And what the viewer later is going to see is just a two-dimensional picture. So they don't have your experience from when you took the picture.
Oh, all right. Hey, we are giving you – we're encouraging you to take pictures. There's no prize, but we do encourage you every month with our assignment of the month. We invite you to upload those pictures to Flickr. There's a tech guy group there. This month, we're asking you to illustrate the word or concept or idea of arrival. Mm-hmm. If you were at the airport for the holidays, I bet you could have taken some good ones. Lots of arrivals. Yeah.
There are a few airport-related pictures there already, yes.
Yeah, I bet there are. But don't limit it to that. There's all sorts of arrivals. Could be a new arrival. It could be a stork with a little baby in its beak. It could be a lot of things. But do take a picture. We'll next week, you think, or the week after, we'll review.
Next week. You've got one more week to submit a picture arrival.
The pressure is on. One more week to take a great shot and upload it. Make sure you tag it with the word arrival. Our wonderful moderator, Renee Silverman, tip of the hat to Renee. We'll welcome you to the group and put your picture up there. And then next week, we'll pick three to talk about on the show. You'll find Chris at chrismarquardt.com. You can find a link to that on our website, techguylabs.com. Or if you want to know about his workshops, in the summer he comes to the U.S., does some great workshops, discoverthetopfloor.com. Discover the top floor. Do you have a nice holiday?
I'm just relaxing at home and putting my feet up and just came upstairs to say hi to him.
Go put your feet back up. But go down the stairs first. And I see you have the brownie Christmas ornament that you decorate your tree with. You've removed one from the tree to show us. See, I bet
that's one of the 12.
For some people, that was their first camera. That's a classic, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chris. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in 2014.
Happy New Year, Leo.
All right. Take care, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget, take those pictures. Post them up on that Flickr site. We'd love to see them. And don't judge yourself. I think Chris is right. Don't look at other people's work and say, I do that all the time. I haven't talked to you about this, Chris, but I lately have been loving Google Plus for storing my pictures. And they did a really fun thing with my pictures from 2013. They made a movie out of it.
Yeah, they have this awesome thing built in that now takes pictures and turns it into something different.
So cool. So more and more I'm putting my pictures on Google Plus just because I just love what they end up doing with them. Thank you, Chris. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Talk to you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Facebook did the same thing with my year, 2013, and pretty much every picture that I put on Google Plus and other places I put on Facebook. For some reason, they decided to highlight the pictures in which I'm dressed as a woman. Those were actually not posted by me, but posted by somebody who used to be my friend. Oh. They do say that everything lives forever on the internet. 8888 Ask Leo. Now I know it's true. We'll go back to the phones. Richard, Minnesota. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. How are you?
Just trying to stay warm.
Yes. How cold? Where in Minnesota? Minneapolis? The Twin Cities? Or?
South Haven.
South Haven.
Yeah, it's over by like St. Cloud.
Mm-hmm. And is it a little chilly in South Haven right now?
Yeah, 2 below.
2 below what? 0?
0.
Oh, lordy, lordy. You're in a small town, though. I'm seeing here the population of South Haven is 187 people.
Yeah, it's not very big.
Does it go down in winter?
Sometimes.
Oh, man. Man. So what can I do? What can I do for you today?
I'm trying to find a video player that works with the Chromecast on my PC.
Oh, I love Chrome. Now let's talk about Chromecast first. Don't you love it?
Yeah, it works great.
$35. We were talking about some of the big technologies of 2013. Time Magazine called the Chromecast the gadget of 2013. It has looks like a USB key that you plug into the HDMI port on your TV. But Google has, I don't think it's fully lived up to its potential yet. In order to use it, you have to have a device, computer or phone or tablet, and you can cast stuff to the Chromecast. So if I'm running Netflix, for instance, on my tablet, and I started a movie, I could then say, now send that movie to Chromecast, watch it on the big screen. The difference between this, say, and stuff like AirPlay that Apple uses or DLNA is that the tablet's no longer involved. It's handed off the video playback to the Chromecast, and it does the work. So you can go do something else with the tablet. You can continue to control the Chromecast, but you could also turn the tablet off. It doesn't matter. The movie continues to play. So right now, a certain number of apps, maybe a dozen apps, support it directly. You can also do something called tab casting. If you're in the Chrome browser, and you add the Chrome extension for the Chromecast, any tab that you're looking at in the browser can also be displayed on the TV. That's a little bit more like AirPlay, because, of course, if you close the laptop at that point, it goes away. But you want to be able to take videos from your computer and put them on the Chromecast.
Yeah.
So the best solution is not yet out. It will be Plex. Are you familiar with Plex?
No, it's first I've heard of
that. So it is a version of the Xbox Media Center, or XBMC, that allows you to play videos, photos, and music from your computer on your TV. But you need a Plex device on your TV, a Roku, or a lot of different things can run Plex. Chromecast can't, but the folks at Plex say, hey, we've put it in, we just have to have Google's approval, and I think Google will approve it soon. So this has been kind of a bottleneck. Google has had to say yes to the apps that are doing this. As soon as Google stops that, and I think it will in the next month or two, first of all, it's going to release another bunch of apps. Like HBO Go just came out. Hulu Plus just came out. I think they're releasing another bunch of apps. And then I think at some point they've announced they're going to just let it go and say, okay, anybody who wants to can now have a Chromecast-enabled app. Then the one you're going to want to look at, I think, is Plex. Oh, Plex went live yesterday. There you go.
Okay.
Now, you have to be a paid subscriber. That is typical with Plex. Then eventually they make it available to everybody. But take a look at it. PlexApp.com. It is my favorite media player for Mac, PC, Android, iOS, everything. And now that it has Chromecast support, that's going to be amazing. That's going to be the way to play back anything that's on your computer.
Okay.
All right.
I was also wondering, when is the extension coming for your guys'?
So we don't make our own apps for our Netcast network. We rely on the kindness of strangers. And there are many strangers, people like Craig Mullaney at Shift Key Software and others who have made apps. I've talked to Craig. He says it's ready to go. We just need approval from Google. This is the same thing where we can't do it till Google says go ahead.
Okay.
As soon as Google tells Craig, yeah, Craig's got the code. It's easy, actually, to add it. Then you'll be able to download the TWiT app, run it on your iPhone or your Android device, and as you're watching video of this show, for instance, press the Chromecast button, and it goes up to your TV. I think Chromecast is great, especially because it's $35. For what it does now is pretty good. HBO Go, Hulu, Netflix, all the Google stuff, Google Play Music, Google Play Movies, Google Play TV, and soon I think everything. That's really when it takes off. It'll be this year. As soon as Google opens the floodgates, I'm very excited. I really think this is going to be the way to get stuff, digital stuff, onto your TV set.
Yeah, because that's what I wanted, to replace watching you on my Google TV, because the Google TV app crashes.
Yeah, and frankly, Google TV is gone. I think Google has already said, you know, we're going to do... Well, they haven't said it. It's leaked out, and I'm pretty sure this is the case, that they're going to do something different, more Chrome-like, more Chromecast-like. Chromecast uses actually an open standard called Dial with some additional features. It's well implemented. It works quite well. And I think that you no longer, if you're doing it from the website, you don't need to have Plex Premium. You can use the free Plex to do this. So I would take a look at Plex. You may want to set up a Plex server if you have a computer that has a lot of media content. Put the Plex server on it. Then that media content is everywhere on the network. And you could do it on the Chromecast. I really like Chromecast, and I think that we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Even now, for $35, what it does is great. I use it a lot. But the potential is so much more. So much more. 8888-ASK. Leo, let's go on to our next call, which is in Santa Cruz, California. Marshall's on the line. Hi, Marshall.
Hello. You know, I may have talked to you some years ago. Were you on KGO or radio station?
I was doing Saturday nights in the, that was in the early 90s, I think.
Well, anyway, I'm not sure, but when I was a kid in Minnesota, there was a billboard on the side of the restaurant, and it said, Whoopi John will fart. And his orchestra will play. And I thought you and I had a big laugh about that one day. I can't remember.
I think your memory's accurate. That does sound vaguely familiar, believe it or not. 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, we used to send the little kids over and have to read it out loud. It was great. Hey, I have I had a client come in to me. I'm an audiologist. And she's
okay.
A senior lady, and she says, I work for a junkyard, and I'm the bookkeeper. I said, really? And what do they do? Well, among other things, they bring in a whole bunch of computers every week.
Oh, yeah.
A whole bunch of them back in the car. And she said, between $17,000 and $20,000 worth of gold comes out the next week.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of precious metal in all of these electronics, some of which can be recovered, some of which cannot.
Yeah.
And gold is, of course, the most precious.
This is what they're doing, and I imagine that you need a lot of junk units in order to make it.
Well, here's the of course you do. And frankly, recycling these is non-trivial, so she's working for somebody who knows how to do this. Unfortunately, the trend is away from this because of, for instance, Apple's stuff, which is all glued together. Only Apple can recycle it. A traditional recycler is just going to grind it up, and the precious metals will be lost, and all of the stuff that's in there is going to be lost and incinerated and put back into the environment in the most unfriendly way. So I do think that paying attention to recyclability is important, and Apple is not doing it.
Anyway, I just thought I would.
Yeah, there's gold in them, our computers. Absolutely. Lot of good stuff in there. Hey, great to talk to you again 20 years later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, another hour to come. Well, hey, how are you today? Hour three of the Tech Guy Show. Last hour of the year 2014 begins on Wednesday, and then we'll do our first shows of the year next weekend, and we'll talk a little bit about what's ahead, I think. Mostly this time, this show and the last, we've been focusing on what 2013 was all about. Chromecast, I almost left that out. I'm glad somebody asked about the Chromecast, because that probably at $150, who cares? But at $35, of course, I bought five of them, so I spent more than $150. It's $175. But those are pretty cool. Every one of my TVs has one. 8888 Ask Leo. That is the number. Heather Hammond has the day and the rest of the year. I'm going to give her the rest of the year off. So Kim Schaefer filling in. Hi, Kim. Wearing Colin Kaepernick's number 7. Look, give me a little bicep kiss. There we go. All right. You need the tats, though. You see, you're missing the.
Yeah, they're hidden.
Ah, they're under the. Not with Colin.
No,
so yeah. Everywhere. So there's so many people on the line.
Well, you
here.
Have so many people, but Johnny Jett's on the line.
What?
Yeah.
Well, let's say hello to Johnny Jett. Let me pick him up on the hotline. Hi, Johnny. Happy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. I hope you had a Merry Christmas.
I did. I was in freezing cold Toronto, which I think we tried to Skype in last week.
And you were in transit yesterday. Normally, Johnny Jett joins us. He's our travel guru, talks about using technology to get better deals in travel. His website is johnnyjett.com. And normally, he talks to us on Saturday. But I gather you were in transit. Now, I'm looking at your Facebook, and it looks like you've gotten away from the cold weather somehow.
Yeah, I have. I'm on the Garden Island. Hawaii.
Oh, you're making me jealous now.
I'm jealous. I mean, I'm sitting here working in my room right now going, man, I got to go outside. Although
yeah, forget. What are you doing on a radio show? Get out there. Enjoy the. Is it nice? Now, isn't Kauai kind of rainforest?
Oh, yeah. It's one of the wettest places. Well, there's a part of the island which is one of the wettest places on Earth. I think it's number 2 or 3 in the world. It used to be number 1.
I have friends who went there. For a week, and it rained the whole week. And I said, well, what'd you expect? You're in a rainforest. Of course, the other side of the island, it never rains.
Well, I'm in Princeville at the St. Regis, and it is, you know, it looks like it's going to rain any minute, but it's beautiful.
Oh.
Plus, at least I can go outside and walk around without a huge jacket on like in Toronto.
Well, tell me, how did you get there? By plane, by boat, by train?
You never been to Kauai?
I have not. I've only been to Maui.
All right. Well, anyway, we flew to L.A., spent a night or two in L.A., didn't break up the trip from Toronto, and then flew nonstop on United.
That's great.
To here, which, you know, United needs to improve their service a little bit, by the way. It's not like it used to be when you used to fly to Hawaii.
It's like a big Greyhound bus now.
No, it's just not even that. You know, they used to make their own Mai Tais on the plane. They used to serve the guava juice and all that stuff and macadamia nuts. They don't do it anymore.
Do they at least put a lei around your neck when you get off the plane in Kauai?
No. No, only the tour operators do if you go through a tour operator. We did not. So we did not get a lei, which is unfortunate.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad to hear from you.
We don't have a lot of time, do we?
No, we have a few minutes. Go ahead, but you want to get outside. I understand. You want to get some sand between those pink tootsies. So,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'll give you my website next week.
All right. We'll do that. Give my regards to Natalie, your lovely wife. I hope she's with you.
She is. She's with me.
It would be criminal to leave her in Toronto and go to Hawaii. Are you going to spend New Year's in Hawaii?
We are. Actually, I'm here with Starwood, SPG, and they said we could go anywhere in the country. Natalie wanted to go to New York. I go, are you kidding me?
What?
Go to New York.
for it's freezing cold in here.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, we're doing, I don't know if you knew this, but on New Year's Eve, we're doing, I'm calling it the 24 hours of 2014. We're going to say hello and do a countdown to every time zone. I'm going to be on the air for 24 hours starting at 4 a.m. Pacific on Tuesday, going through 4 a.m. New Year's Day. You could be, if you wish, at 4 a.m. Pacific, midnight Hawaii time, the very last Happy New Year. Would you be willing to do that?
Of course. So what time do I need to call in? At midnight?
Midnight. Whatever. What else?
Midnight in Hawaii?
Midnight. I call a few minutes early so we can watch the celebration and the countdown, and we have a balloon drop. We'll drink a glass of champagne, and I think it would be our last one. There might be one more after that. I think it's our last one, though.
There's one more after that.
All right. Yeah, I think so. I'll be up one more hour after that. But you'll get me at my nearly punchiest, so that should be fun.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I just got to run by my wife.
Yeah, well, if you're busy kissing her or something, you don't have to do it. It's okay. I understand. You are a newlywed, after all. I can't ask you to forgo that. The midnight kiss.
Yeah, if you email me, I'll be
set it up. If not,
cell phone, no problem.
If not, get Don Ho or somebody. There's got to be somebody out there who could do it for us.
Unfortunately, Don Ho died.
He's not here, not with us. We'll find somebody. Hey, thank you, Johnny. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, take care. Yeah, I think Hawaii's 2 a.m. Pacific time, so I will have two more hours. Then we're going to do Tahiti. I don't know what. It's crazy. I don't know. This seemed like a good idea 6 months ago when I thought it up. Now, as I approach it, I'm getting more and more nervous. You can watch the festivities. The reason was, I felt like here on the West Coast, everything's all about New York. When the ball drops in Times Square, that's only 9 here, and it's like over. And I thought, somebody needs to do a New Year's Eve broadcast that goes the whole thing so that no matter what time zone you're in, there's still a party going on. So that's what we're doing. You can watch it live, twit.tv, TWIT.tv is the website, live audio and video streaming for 24 hours. You can watch me slowly melt down. I don't know. Huh? We're all going to melt down. Some of the staff is working in shifts. No? Everybody? Jeff, you're going to be there the whole time? Jeff Needles is going to be building a Lego version of the Tower of London. Is it life-size?
Tower Bridge.
Tower Bridge. Is that the one in Lake Havasu, Arizona? We don't know. It's a bridge. It's English. It's made out of bricks. He's going to be building that. We're going to be playing games. We've got live music. We've got a balloon drop. But we've realized that you can't just do 20. I think there's 27 time zones or something. You can't do 27 balloon drops. So what we're going to, well, you can. But what we're going to do is we're hooking the balloons up. And when they drop, they're going to be hooked up to fishing line. And then we're just going to yank them back up for the next hour. Are you testing it right now? I think Burke is actually testing the resettable balloon drop. 8888, ask Leo. Gary on the line. Dana Point, California. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Gary.
Hello, Gary.
You know, he probably thought I wasn't going to go to him, so I'm going to put him on hold, Kim, so that we don't lose him. And then I'll take the next person. Zach, Gilbert, Arizona. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I got two quick questions for you. First question is, I've got some old computers in my office that I don't use anymore. I'd like to get rid of them. But before I do, is there a way that I could virtualize them so I could use them virtually on a virtual machine?
Ah, what a good idea. What a good idea. So, in effect, you've still got them. But
right.
The hardware is gone, but the software lives on. Yeah, VMware lets you they're Windows machines, I take it.
Yes.
Yeah. VMware has a player that lets you play, they call them appliances, which are pre-configured, pre-installed downloads. And I'm sure, I don't know what the name of it is, but I'm sure that they make the other side of that, the thing that takes the build and makes it into an appliance. So check it out, VMware.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laborde, the tech guy, talking high tech. Yes, we are. So I think we got Gary back Oh, by the way, for Zach, we found two good choices. I mentioned VMware, and they have something called the VMware Converter. That's free. It will either take a physical disk or a disk image that you make with an imaging program and turn that into a virtual machine for use with the VMware player. If you want to use Microsoft's Hyper-V or a virtual PC, Microsoft also has a free app called Disk2VHD. That's a download that will create a virtual hard drive for Microsoft's virtual machine format. So there's quite a few nice little choices available to you to do exactly what you want to do. He wanted to take 10 old machines or whatever and make virtual disks of them and then have one machine whenever he felt like looking back to the good old days. He could just boot up his old machine in a virtual machine and see it. What a good idea. What a lot of fun. Let's say we got Gary back from Dana Point, California. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry about that.
Hey, Leo. Can you hear me this time?
I hear you great.
Perfect. What a privilege to speak with you, listening to you for years.
Thank you.
So Santa bought me an Apple TV third generation for Christmas, so I can AirPlay my iPad and my iPhone.
That's the best use of it. It's wonderful. Anything you could put on an iPad or a Macintosh running a OS 10 Mountain Lion or Mavericks, or an iPhone, you can broadcast back up onto your TV through the Apple TV. It works very well.
It would work very well if I had a TV with an HDMI output.
Oh.
I don't. It's a 2003. It's HD-ready Philips, and it can do 1080p.
Yeah.
Can I do a straight HDMI to RCA cable? Do I need to decode it, or I just need to spring for a new TV?
No. Well, you don't need to... Well, yeah, you can convert it. Your TV takes, I presume, component in, which has got green, yellow, and blue. It's got three weird connectors. So what you need is a box. Component is analog. HDMI is digital. So you're going to need a box that converts the HDMI. And it's not just going to have the component outputs, the three component outputs. It's also going to have to do audio because audio goes over HDMI as well. So, but you can get those. I would go to monoprice.com. That's always the best place to go to get inexpensive, but I think good hardware to do something like this. Geffen, G-E-F-E-N, is a company that would make such a thing. Won't be cheap.
I saw that online, but that's $250 for that thing.
It won't be cheap.
Wow.
Let me say it again. Because it's converting. It's doing. It's active. So there's different kinds of connectors. If you're going digital to digital, then you just need a connector that changes the physical connection. But if you're going digital to analog or analog to digital, then you need a little computer, a little DSP chip that is going to churn on that stuff and convert it into a different format. So, yeah, it's expensive. B&H has one... for $50, that's the Kanex, K-A-N-E-X Pro. I think probably the Geffen is more expensive than you need to be. And I would try MonoPrice. They'll have the lowest cost.
So I guess the question is, I have it's not the Retina, it's the iPad 2. And I have all this wonderful display, and now I'm downgrading it to... Not from digital. Is it worth it? Am I going to lose some of the picture on it on a regular?
Yeah, it's not going to look quite as good. Here's one from SIG that we use. Converts an HDMI source to VGA or component, plus two-channel digital SPDIF audio. That's you need a separate audio. Yeah, I mean it's a fairly heavy-duty thing to do. But, I mean, you might want to just use this as an excuse to get a brand new HD TV.
Too late for Santa.
Yeah, it's the $99 gift that ends up costing $1,000.
$300, exactly.
Yeah. But you can find very good Vizio. I would look at your big box stores for a Vizio. You can get very nice. How big is your current TV?
32, 33.
Oh, all right. So you can go get a Vizio for a few hundred dollars that'll be bigger than that.
Okay.
And have HDMI. So I think you're better off not doing the converter. There are copy protection issues as well. I think you're better off not doing the converter, but getting a new TV. And the good news is, because your current TV is kind of small, getting a 42-inch, which is the smallest HD TV I'd recommend, shouldn't be more than a few hundred bucks.
Oh, cool. Okay.
All right. That'd be all cheaper than the converter. All right. Thanks for calling. Alrighty, sorry. I'm good at spending people's money. I think I warned you about that. Let's say hi to, is it Georgianne in Pomona, California? Hi, Georgianne.
Hi there.
Welcome.
We have, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Currently, we have an RV, and what we do is we take our portable antenna and the receiver for our DirecTV and put it in the RV, and we have to set it up and point the dish every time we stop and want to use it.
Right.
And then we thought about Slingbox and doing, you know, it through our hotspot.
Yeah.
On our iPad or our phone, yeah, or something, but that, yeah, really, really impacts our data plan.
Oh, yeah. oh, yeah.
Do you have any other ideas?
Those are your two choices. You can either, if you a lot of people with RVs do satellite TV, and they even have satellites that will self-aim and so forth, but they're expensive. Yeah, because you always have to aim them in the southern sky and get that signal working. Or you can use the internet, and Slingbox is a good way to do it. You'll hook up the Slingbox to your home theater system, and then over the internet, mm-hmm, you can watch it. But a couple of things. First of all, your bandwidth isn't great on 3G or even 4G, so the you're probably not going to get an HD picture. And secondly, mm-hmm, as you mentioned, you're going to go through bandwidth caps pretty quick if you watch TV every night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of, those are, as far as I know, those are the two choices. Use either satellite or internet. If you're driving the RV to places that have Wi-Fi, you can always do that.
Right. Well, that sounded like a good idea, but
yeah, you'll slice through those data caps very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think the quality isn't going to be great and all of that. I'm sorry to be hey, but you're seeing the world. You're driving around. Well, forget TV. Look out your window. Who needs, you know, the house mob wives of New Jersey City when you've got the Yosemite out your window? Really? Come on. Come on. Andy in Rancho Santa Margarita. Hi, Andy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And then local news will just depress you. So, hey, Andy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for everything you do. You're awesome, Leo.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Right on.
Thanks for listening.
No problem. I've got a 13-year-old son, and it seems like every year or less, you know, I need to upgrade a computer for this guy, and it's making me crazy. He's going to go into high school next year, and yes, I am calling you so that you can spend my money. I really appreciate that. But if you could spend a little time.
Think of it this way. It's an investment because he's going to be taking care of you in your old age, and you're teaching him how to make money now.
That's what it is.
Or something.
Right, yeah. He makes things, that's for sure.
Good. What does he do? What does he do with the computer?
Well, okay, at this point, you know, for Christmas, Santa Claus was nice enough to give him one of those Logitech, you know, gaming steering wheel consoles.
Oh, he plays, yeah. Well, hold on a sec, because we got to take a break, but I think we can help you here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That was the refrain of 2013 in the tech sector. Money, money, money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's see here. We were talking to Andy in Rancho Santa Margarita. He's got a 13-year-old who continually needs upgrades. So are you looking at a new computer? What are you looking at now here, Andy?
Well, that is the question. I mean, I think if I had to write a check for maybe one of those nice iMacs that we can run parallels and you can.
Well, what has he got right now? What has he got right now?
Well, right now he has like a 3-year-old Toshiba, you know, and it was one of those $600 laptops,
yeah,
you know, so it doesn't work.
You don't mind. I mean, you got your money's worth, $200 a year for 3 years. That's not bad.
Right.
That's not bad. An iMac would be a much better choice going into high school, I think. And the advantage of the iMac, especially with a 13-year-old, is you could put it in a relatively public place, you know, the living room or, you know, in a hall somewhere. Don't let him have it in the bedroom. You give him a laptop, goodbye, and closes the door, locks it, and you've lost him. So it's nice, especially with that age, to have it somewhere public where you can kind of keep an eye on what he's doing.
Sure.
And the rest of the family can use it. Why should it just be his?
Right. Well, that's the question. It becomes the most popular machine, you know?
Yeah, and it might. But what you can do is have a different account for everybody. Make sure, you know, he just tell him, log out when you're done. I think that's a good choice. An iMac... You can use a virtual machine, but you can also use boot camp if you get a big enough hard drive and literally run it as a Windows machine. I do that. You know, we have an 11-year-old who's using, he likes a game, so he uses Windows, but I run it on a Mac Pro. So he also has access to the Mac. He's got the best of both worlds, and I think that's a good way to go.
Would you do boot camp over Parallels?
Yes, because on gaming and anything you need ultimate speed, you want to make sure Windows has every bit of the hardware resources. The nice thing, you still can use VMware Fusion or Parallels, the virtualization programs. They'll see that you have boot camp and say, oh, we don't need to install Windows then. We'll just, when you want to run Windows within the Mac, you can do that. When you want to run it full screen, all hardware, you can do that. You get the choice.
I see.
It works beautifully. Okay. Yeah, it really works well. And then, you know, especially for a student, I think it's nice to have both. It's good to get him used to both worlds. You know, he's had a Windows machine for 3 years, so he's going to be very comfortable with that.
Right.
It's a good choice.
Okay. Well, thanks again for spending my money.
Yeah, this is expensive. I mean, these iMacs, $12.99. I mean, they're not horribly expensive. I got to say, they're thin, they're light, they're I use one and I love it. You know, they're really they're nice machines, and they're good enough looking that you don't mind having them somewhere in public because they're attractive.
Yeah, sounds like the way to go. Well,
good. Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for calling. You are a nice dad, and tell your son I'm expecting you to pick a nice nursing home for me in a few years.
Will do.
I want you to spend all this money I spent on you now in the nursing home. CJ's on the line from Northridge, California. Hi, CJ. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for the great work you do.
Oh, I have fun doing it. I don't really consider it work, but you're very welcome. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
The reason I'm calling you today is that my mother is older, and she's having to use TV ears when she's watching television. And over the weekend, we were watching a DVD, and she said she couldn't hear it.
Ah.
And so I said, well, why don't you put on your TV ears? And she said that they wouldn't work with the DVD player. So do you know of a product that she could use that would enable her to hear the DVD in a higher volume other than the TV ears?
Well, the TV ears should work, but it's going to be how it's set up.
I see.
So it's not that the DVD player won't work with it. It's just that she's got the TV ears plugged into, I'm not sure what, the TV, I guess. And so when the audio is coming from another source, perhaps it doesn't work. It's really how it's set up. The TV ears should work just fine with the DVD.
And so where would we plug them into? Can you tell me?
I'm just thinking about how this would be best configured. She just has a TV, and when she watches the DVD, she just hooks it up to the TV. Normally, I'm trying to think of how she might. When you watch TV, when you're over there, all the audio, including DVD audio, comes to the TV speakers. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm not sure why it doesn't work. The only thing I could think of is perhaps the DVD is configured not to do left-right audio, but surround sound audio or something like that. This should work.
All right.
Is she nearby or is she distant?
No, she's nearby.
Okay. So I think if you've got the TV ears hooked up to the TV audio out, the DVD's going into the TV and you play it, and normally you'd hear it through the TV speakers. She can hear it through the TV ears. If she's not hearing the DVD audio, you might go into the settings of the DVD and make sure that the audio on the DVD is set to stereo, left-right stereo. Or even mono, frankly, would be better.
And that would be set up to?
Just coming out of the TV audio. I'm sure that's where the TV ears are plugged now, though, so I'm not sure why she can't hear that. She should be able to hear the DVD.
All right.
Now, TV ears does have a toll-free help line, and I'm sure that they've heard this question before. So if it's not obvious to you when you get there, I would call them up.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm sorry I can't be more specific. I need to know exactly how she's got it hooked up at home. It should work. As long as the TV ears is taking audio, not from a cable box, but from the TV. See, maybe she's hooked it up to the cable box, and then it wouldn't work. So hook it up to the TV audio. What you want is anything that's coming out of the TV speakers should be going to the TV ears. Maybe change, if there's Blu-ray settings for headphones, change it to that. See if that works. Or DVD settings for headphones. I'm sure you can get this working, CJ. Just maybe take a little fussing around with it. Chris is in Fort Worth, Texas, where the West begins. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I hope you all are all having a good holiday.
We are. I'm a little nervous about this 24-hour thing I'm doing on New Year's Eve, but hey, talk to me next weekend. If I don't sound exhausted, I made it.
Right. That's all part of it, right?
Yeah, it'll be fun. I want to be a little punchy towards the end. Yeah.
Awesome.
So what can I do for you?
I got a Nexus 7 32 gig for Christmas.
Nice. And yeah.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's really cool. My question was, I have it obviously hooked up to Wi-Fi when I'm at home, and when I go to my parents' house, I use it over there in their Wi-Fi. But it has the LTE capability.
Oh, great.
And I'm kind of confused as to how that works. I have Sprint as my mobile carrier, and apparently they don't support the device so far, I guess, is what I'm learning.
Verizon doesn't. I thought Sprint did.
They might. Like I said, I really just started researching it and got real confused.
Yeah, so the LTE and the Nexus 7 is compatible with, I believe, with AT&T, T-Mobile, and I maybe not Sprint, maybe Sprint. Let me just check. I'm looking on the Sprint
site. Yeah, I went on the Sprint website, and apparently, because I first got
I guess it's not. I guess it's not. It's GSM. Right. It's GSM only. So that right. means you'll have to buy a data plan from either T-Mobile or AT&T.
Okay. Then that would just be able to use it outside of my Wi-Fi range, right?
Yeah, it's automatic. When you're in Wi-Fi range, it turns it off because it knows it costs money. So it just uses it when you're not within Wi-Fi.
I don't really see myself using it anywhere but home or maybe...
You know what I would do? T-Mobile's offering 200 megabytes a month free.
Oh, right.
So that's not a lot, but since you mostly are using it in Wi-Fi, it would give you a little bit of data access those days you're on the road. You want to just check the email or something. You'd have to be very judicious, but that's what I would do.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Then you got the 200 megs, and if you need more, T-Mobile's probably more affordable than AT&T anyway.
Right. Very cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a nice tablet. Make sure you get the KitKat update. Do the latest and greatest Android on that thing. Beautiful screen. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. One more segment to go for 2013 right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Coming up on 2014. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the year. Can you believe it? Let's say hi to, next week, by the way, I do want to say 10th anniversary of the show. We're going to celebrate good times with the 10th anniversary. Of course, I'll be exhausted from New Year's Eve, and I'll probably not do anything. But we will have a balloon drop. We will have a balloon drop. Brant in Northridge, California. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Brant.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
My question is, I've got a 75-year-old mother who has developed macular degeneration, and she's not real computer savvy. She missed a couple of generations with that, and we bought her a new laptop last year. I'm wondering if there's any, well, I know there is, but I'm wondering what you suggest as far as a voice recognition program that she could use that she could just talk to the computer instead of trying to look and see buttons.
I have a friend who has macular degeneration. It's very common, of course, at a certain age. And he just makes the screen as big as possible. Does she have any sight at all?
Yes, she does.
Yeah, so you could do that. But there are certainly screen readers, and that's what she's looking for. Most of them are intended for people with no vision at all. JAWS is the best known. It's very expensive.
At this point, I'm not really worried about cost. It's just that she won't do anything.
Right, and you may get some help, by the way, if you go to your local independent living resource center or the Lighthouse for the Blind. A lot of places will help people with vision difficulties buy tools like this. So JAWS is one. Orca is an open source screen reader. Probably not as good as JAWS, but at least it's free.
Now, when you say screen reader, what is it? What do you mean by that?
It reads the screen out loud. So she can't see the screen. This is mostly for people who can't see it at all. But if she can't see the screen reader will actually read dialogue boxes, read menus and so forth, and give you a way of selecting using an arrow key or space bar or a variety of other choices.
Really?
Yeah. So the idea being you don't actually have to have sight at all to use a computer. And I know a great many blind people who very happily and competently use computers using screen readers.
Okay, terrific.
Yeah. So there's quite a few choices. JAWS is the best known.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I appreciate your help.
And, yeah, you can always get help from there are a lot of local groups that will help blind folks get things like JAWS up and running and train them and so forth. Of course, she's got to want to do it. And I understand it might be a little frustrating for her. But you're right. It's the best thing she could do, I think. Josh, Santa Ana, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Leo. This is John.
Oh, I'm sorry. John. Misread it. Thank you.
All right.
What can I do for you?
Well, I have a quick... I was hoping you might have a recommendation for a very strong and powerful AM/FM radio.
Yes, I do. Are you are you distant from the radio stations you want to listen to, or?
Yeah, I listen to some talk station or some NPR stations and talk stations. It's hard to get them through.
Yeah, the company to go to is C-Crane, CCRADIO.com, CCRadio.com. They sell a variety of specialty radios with extremely good antennas that will pick up distant signals. I use a number of C-Crane's radios, and I find them quite good. They also have internet radios and other choices. You know, you might find that an internet radio is a better choice for you. Most radio stations now do broadcast over the internet. So if you have internet access where you are, and it doesn't take super high-speed access for just audio, I use an internet radio even though I can get broadcast signals. And it's great. You can get any radio station in the world in many cases, including by the way, our broadcast from the Twit Netcast Network. We're on the internet radio as well. C-Crane, excellent company. Love them. Highly recommend them. And they are kind of the last man standing making great AM/FM radios. They make high-quality, very effective radios. You can even buy external antennas from them and so forth to do a long-distance listening. I'm a fan. And Bob Crane is a great guy, a longtime friend of not just of people, but of radio stations. They're a real supporter for a lot of radio shows across the country. Not ours. That's fine. I understand. No, Morris, actually, I think we've been sold out for years and they've been trying to get on. Morris, Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Morris.
Hi. I'm having problems. I use Firefox as my browser.
Okay.
And I got an email from Sears, and it says shop now. So I click on that. Up comes another window that says click here to view external link.
Oh, no. Okay.
And if I click on there, I get to the link that I want. Now, how do I eliminate that?
You don't want to do that. First of all, be very careful about clicking links in email. I strongly recommend against it. Part of the reason being you can't tell what you're really clicking. Now, I don't know what Fizz is.
Well, this is an ad I got on from Sears.
Oh, Sears, not Fizz.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sears. And it's so that's weird. So you're reading the Sears email.
Right.
You click the link, and it says, oh, click this link to go there.
Right. Now, how do I go to Firefox and allow that to happen?
Well, they're trying to protect you because it is a known security hazard to click on links from email. For instance, I could send you an email that looks in every respect like it's from Sears. But, in fact, even the link would say, buy something great from Sears at a very low cost right now. Click this link. And the link takes you to hacker.com. You might not notice because it looks just like Sears. And by the time you figure it out, it's too late. Your machine is infected. It's very dangerous. Just because it looks like a Sears ad does not mean it is a Sears ad. I strongly recommend against ever clicking links in email. And that's what Firefox is trying to protect you from. Now, I don't know. I bet you there's a way to turn that off in Firefox. But what they're doing is they're verifying this is what the link really is, that link you clicked. Is this really where you want to go? And I think you want to keep that. I really do, Morris, because that's protecting you. Because I don't want you to call me in 2 weeks saying, hey, Leo, I don't know how it happened, but I now can't use my computer anymore, and they want $300 from me because they say they locked all my stuff because I clicked a link in email. So I would leave it there. I would really leave it there. I'm sure there is a way to turn it off, but it's there for your protection. Better if you can, if you get an email from Sears saying we got a great deal, open your browser, open Firefox, type in SEARS.com and go there yourself. Much safer. Much safer. Pablo, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pablo.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I own a small recycling company, and I keep all the records for the volume that we purchase on Excel. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to access those sheets, you know, from my home, from different places. I have employees also add to it every day.
Yeah.
I thought of Google Docs, but I've read that it crashes often, that it's not reliable.
So you want something that Excel doesn't do, which is a single spreadsheet that multiple people can use simultaneously.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's kind of the reason that's a tough thing to do is because if somebody changes it at work and you change it at home at the same time, Excel doesn't know which change to save and which to ignore.
Yeah.
So what you need is something called record locking. And there are certainly ways to do this for multi-users. You need a multi-user spreadsheet. Google Docs is a good choice. I think Google Docs is safe. You might look at Office 365. Jeff, do you know if Office 365, if you use Excel in Office 365, could he have multiple users? Not at the same time, but you would have a central online version of the spreadsheet. One person could change it while that person's doing it, and nobody else can use it. Do you want to have simultaneous users?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Microsoft has changed. Office now is a subscription, a very affordable subscription. I would absolutely move to the new Office, Office 365. Use the online Excel. It'll do what you want. The only thing it can't do is simultaneous users. But if one person changes it and another person changes, no problem.
And is this for business or personal?
It's business or personal. I bought it for personal use. You could put it on 5 different computers. There's a business plan as well. I think it's $30 a month. It's very affordable. And the nice thing about this is it lives in the internet, so it's exactly what you want. It'll always be available to everybody. Hey, that's it. I'm out of time. Have a happy new year. See you next year. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.